Claire.
That's not how we start it.
How do we start?
We start talking about book club stuff, like get your wine and cheese.
Oh, yeah. You want to go flip, 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 flip. Those are pages rustling.
Okay. Sounds like someone who's never had sex before. I mean, like, you know, that's what it sounds like.
You think that's like a mermaid virgin being like, I totally fucked last night. You know, we did the old flip, 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 flip. Wow. 30 seconds in and we've gotten way off topic. Should I close the window behind me?
No, it's fine.
Are you sure? That sounds loud as hell to me.
People love the sights and sounds of New York City. Okay. Now start the podcast.
I don't understand how you live on a one-way street. That sounds like truly a nine-lane highway. I think an interstate highway would be quieter because
introduce the podcast before we talk more.
I'm a book and she's a memoir. We're celebrity memoir book club. Is that how it goes?
No.
Okay, I'm Claire.
And I'm Ashley. And this is celebrity memoir book club.
Hide your cheese.
And grab your pens.
We're spilling tea on cheese.
Okay. Anyway,
we'll work on it.
We're working on it. If you guys have suggestions,
we're open to.
We're always open to
them.
We've
only been thinking about this podcast for 9 months, but we have not had time to think about how it should start.
Yeah. Well, I do think that starting the podcast is the least important part. It's about finishing strong. Podcasts are.
People love to give you the benefit of the doubt of 57 minutes to hear you just call back at the end.
Podcasts are a marathon, not a sprint.
I will say we were just listening to the beginnings of a bunch of podcasts, and I guess I've never actually listened to a podcast before because I hear a lot of them like have an introduction they do every time where they kind of describe what the podcast is. And you know, the thing about us is we're such marketing geniuses that we actually don't have to follow the template that most people have to follow because our intro is just the name. It's Celebrity Memoir Book Club. If you can't figure out what we're doing here, then you're a goddamn idiot. Get out of here. You're too stupid to read books. You don't even deserve our insightful.
Can you even read?
If you can't understand, can you read? Yeah, that's a good question. So anyway, should we get into this week?
Yeah, Claire, how would you title this week as a chapter of your memoir?
I'd say moving in. Returning to the same.
Moving interesting.
Into my own home. Colon. We're back where we started, but it's all different now. Dash.
Lovely.
Here we are, right where we always knew we'd been. And that would be because this is the week that my boyfriend finally moved to the apartment. For those of you who are... Ooh. Thank you. Thank you. If you're listening for the first time, you may say, what a normal, reasonable next step in a relationship. It is a pandemic. It probably made a lot of sense financially for both of you. You have not been listening since March when I first had my first temper tantrum about this. When I showed up to his apartment, casually entered, asked him if he would like to move in with me in June. He said, it's too soon. And then I went to the shower and scream cried. I have been out there not socially distancing, not wearing a mask, coughing in elevators ever since to keep the pandemic alive until now when I have worn him down and finally made him realize it makes sense for us to live together.
People say manifesting your dreams is bullshit, but Claire said them out loud every single day in his face while he slept. And boy, oh boy, did it finally come true.
I said it backwards while he was sleeping so that he would, it would get all mumbled jumbled. I would put my voice through a translator app so he could hear it in French. I sent it to him. And so he thought it was his own original idea. I worked really hard. Not only did I work hard on getting him to move in, but I worked hard on the apartment. It was like a flex apartment. And so I had to take down a wall. It was a project where I was like, oh my God, I'm going to paint one weekend. It's going to be so cute. 19 days of like wiping down
walls. You had to like strip the wall from its core.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It was awful. It turned out there was two layers of wallpaper that had been there for like truly a century. And I had to just take Windex to them and scrape them off with a little scraper. It took days and hours and it took a lot of fucking work, but we're there.
You can no longer advertise it as an apartment with pre-war wallpaper.
Hidden under a little surprise pre-war under the paint that you are looking at.
Pre-war details, just the wallpaper.
And just the sub-wall wallpaper. There's the wallpaper, then there's another wall, and then there's wallpaper. But so yeah, I've been working on that and it's finally done. He's moved in. It's almost the first of the month, so I guess any day now we'll find out how we're splitting rent. We haven't really officially talked to it in a way that involved numbers.
Interesting. I can't wait to hear how that goes.
But I'm sure it'll go out good. I know that when you don't hammer out details, that's when things go smoothly because there's no bumpy edges. There's just general abstract ideas.
I agree with that. If you put your exact hopes on an, if you put your hopes on an exact number, then what if that number doesn't come true? But what if the outcome is still fairly reasonable?
Well, I just meant that, like, at some point we will, I guess, have to have a conversation. Like, a number will be made.
Sure.
The landlord has put his number down hard.
What if you guys both just write a number on a piece of paper and send in the checks?
And see if we still have a place to live.
Yeah.
That would be really funny. And then let the landlord handle it. What a passive-aggressive way to handle rent.
If he calls and is like, you guys underpaid by $1,000.
So yeah, I mean, it's been exhausting. It's been a lot of work. It turns out moving an entire apartment that he's lived in for 3 years was like not just an afternoon.
Interesting.
But it's been fun. How was your week, Ashley?
My week was good.
What would you have called it chapter-wise?
I would call it chapter-wise. I would call it the fun part, honestly. Can I just say, I feel like there is many stages in a relationship as well as many stages of being single. If you guys listen to the old podcast, you know about the lengthy saga that was the end of my last relationship. And I do feel like even
okay,
though...
Plug real quick that we will be doing a Patreon. And so if the old listeners who remember that we used to get ourselves fired from jobs, broken up with by boyfriends for talking so much shit with first and last names and like company LLCs. If you guys remember those days, we have learned and we are going to keep divulging way too much information.
But behind a paywall.
Behind a paywall.
I'm sorry.
So that we don't lose our insurance. Please sign up for the Patreon. We will be doing bonus apps where we give all the juicy details of the bullshit nonsense that is our lives.
Yes, I'm going to put it in the link in bio.
And Ashley, even though she said her and her boyfriend were going to break up August 1st, they did not. So please subscribe and find out what the fuck happened next because it's... You're going to want to hear it, even though it'll be exactly what you expected.
Yes, it will be exactly as expected, but more.
But just not to Ashley.
Yeah.
Ashley was consistently surprised.
I'm an idiot, okay? You guys, can I just say, if you think that I'm not an idiot, you can't read.
Or listen, because we've been screaming into these microphones. We spent the last 4 years doing podcasts being like, have you heard of Dumber Girls? No. Anyway, so go back. So you're the
okay.
Fun
so
part.
I would title this chapter "The Fun Part" because I do feel like at the end of a relationship there is like that mourning period, even when like you're not, even when you don't want to be in that relationship anymore. It just like still kind of like sucks to be single at first, and then it hits me that I like think it's so fun, and then in a couple months it'll again be like, okay, I wish I wasn't single anymore. But like right now I'm in that part where I feel like the first guy that I went out on a date with post breakup, I like had weird expectations and I just like wasn't used to it anymore, and now I've like had that palate cleanse and I am hooking up with this like weird French dude. He cooks me
not
food.
Just French, like Moroccan
Parisian. It's very exotic. He's very good at cooking. No one's ever cooked anything for me before, except for like Matt used to make like plain lentils and stuff, like prison food. Anyway, my mom was like, oh, do you like him? And I was like, I honestly cannot tell you a single goddamn word he's ever said. It is so hard to understand. I am in love with him. So yeah.
I mean, honestly, he's tall.
I'm like talking to a bunch of people. I'm like dating. If there wasn't a pandemic, I would be whoring myself around town in the funnest way. But like instead, I'm just safely whoring and I'm loving it. I'm in the fun part.
I'm so jealous. The fun part is so fun.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I like obviously Mac has moved in. My fun part days are probably behind me unless like, something bad happens, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like if you ever have another fun part, it'd be like a much more tragic fun part.
Yeah, except for, of course, I just bought the sluttiest top this weekend that I plan to wear for the post-vaccine orgy, I assume we're all going to, which I do like. I mean, nobody's like said this out loud to me yet, but I assumed we were all banking on once there's a vaccine, we'll all go into the streets and all couples will get like a hall pass. All singles will get an AIDS pass and we'll all just like have insane orgies in the streets for just like one day and then go back to our pre-COVID lives.
Yeah. It's a day that no one will ever speak of again. Like 9/11. It'll be...
That's my last hope for a fun part.
It really is. But yeah, I kind of forgot that
it'll
like there is...
Year.
I forgot that there is that like weird like phase where like after you get out of a relationship where you like kind of like don't... You like forget that being single is fun and yes. then it like kind of hits you and you're like, oh yeah, this is so fun. And so now I'm just living it up,
especially
living large.
Like a post a pandemic where nobody's been able to meet anybody. We haven't even been able to hang out with like, yeah. acquaintances. Like the thirst I have... For just like
casual
running into somebody
chatting.
I barely know and like having a fun conversation where it's like we both have our best stories to put forward. Like that first hour of meeting somebody, if you're a good chatter, is so much fun because I've been practicing that first hour thousands of times my entire
life. It's so fun. Can I also say that like this week I like saw friends a couple times. I like watched football with a couple like friends that I don't see that often. I like was at a comedy show where I saw people I don't see that often. Like the high that I have been getting from catching up with an acquaintance is the like there's like a come down.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a dip in there. I was just okay. So I bought this slutty shirt and literally last night you, me and Mac were talking and I was like, I just want to go clubbing. I haven't gone clubbing in like 8 years. I remember being 22, going to a club for Halloween, looking around and being like, I'm too old to be here. And now I'm almost 28. So I was like, I obviously cannot go to a club anymore. But suddenly this weekend, I bought this insane shirt. It is just a piece of orange mesh that like, if I don't eat all day, I can fit it around my dumb fat like shoulders. Like it's barely, it's already falling apart. I haven't taken it out of the bag. I looked at it last night and I was like, oh, there's holes in this already. It was $120.
Are you kidding me?
I didn't know it was going to be like that.
They but then tell you the price before they swipe your card.
I don't think they did because oh. I was shocked to hear it. And I remember looking and being like, I didn't think it was, and I just was stuck because the woman who designs the clothing was sitting there and I was like, she's had a hard winter, so I have to buy this. But I was saying like, I want to go clubbing so bad. And then today my friend Regina sent us a text and was like, oh my God, you guys remember clubbing? And even Daphne, my least slutty little friend, was like, I bought this mini leather skirt to go clubbing in. She's like, I don't know where else I could wear it. And
I think Daphne is also entering. Daphne's in the fun part too. And yeah. like, I feel like we could all go to a club right now.
But it's just like, these are people who have never spoken of clubbing in the last half decade. And suddenly we're all like, if a promoter doesn't text me, hey, what's up in the next 20 minutes, like I would do anything for a New York City promoter to commute in from Long Island where his mom lives and take us all to Avenue where we all split like $1 cranberry in the smallest little bit of vodka. Nobody can stand up. It's hard to get the bartender's attention even. It's $37 one time. Oh, some Russian oligarch tries to take me home and I think about it, but then I'm like, no, I can't.
I could never live in Russia. You think New York gets cold in the winter? Uh-uh.
Yeah. And everybody's sweaty. It's so hot. You can't hear anything. Your ears hurt. Do you remember, did you ever go to Lava? No, right?
No.
You never really did New York clubbing. Lava.
Wait, is that actually where we went? After
yes.
your work
yes.
holiday
it
party.
Has a downstairs club part for the weekends uh-huh. where they do this thing where they literally do a train noise just every 2 minutes.
So why?
I don't know. I guess because like they want people to have seizures and leave. Like they can't figure out another way to like clear out the club. It was actually where famously I got like a guy I was kind of talking to was a dick to me and like ignored me and I was humiliated. So I started crying and I'll never forget at 3 a.m. at Lavo, the bus boy coming up to me and giving me a shot of tequila and being like, you look like you need this. And I was just like, wow, if the bus boy at Lavo feels bad for me, for me,
then things are bad.
And I need to get my life together, man. I don't think I ever, like that was the last time I hung out with that group of people. That was a real, that shot of tequila might as well have been a cold Gatorade bath. I don't know what wakes somebody up.
I think cold Gatorade would wake you up. It always does that at the end of football games when there's a big yeah. win and the coach is falling asleep. They give him a
yeah, when the coach is
a cold
sleepy.
Gatorade bath.
Do you have any final comments about the week? Because I feel like we have a really long episode with like one of like the best guests we've ever
yeah,
had.
Yeah, it's going to be an episode that we're not going to cut that much. We're trying to keep this podcast short and sweet for you guys, but then it turns out we had such a lovely conversation that it would be a disservice to remove it.
And honestly, the less of us, the more of her, the better.
Yeah.
You know her from Girls Gotta Eat. She has an incredible podcast that's taking the world by storm.
Yes.
I just interviewed Elizabeth Warren, huge.
Yes, but she's here to talk to us about Jessica Simpson.
Give it up for Ashley Hesseltine. We'll be right back.
I feel like it's so funny having like two Ashleys and a Claire to like talk about a Jessica. I feel like we're like just like a bunch of schoolyard bullies, like about to start some serious shit.
Two Ashleys, you're about to get fucked up.
I know.
What was your relationship with Jessica like going into reading the book? Like, what did you think about her growing up? What did you know of her? What was your preconceived notion? Did you love her?
Okay, so I grew up, I mean, in early high school with Brittany, Christina, Jessica. And she was maybe my least favorite. I liked her. I knew she had talent, but like, I think you even know who you like resonate with. And I obviously got those kind of churchy vibes. And I just was like, I don't know if that's my girl, you know, like, I don't really know who was my girl now. Cause I wasn't even like super duper Britney. I was Destiny's Child. Those were who I wanted to be. But I didn't like hate on her. I feel like I've always felt the authenticity. I watched Newlyweds. Like, I think even the moments with the chicken and the tuna, like you were like, oh, she's like she's dumb. Like that. It was so much more acceptable to call someone like a dumb blonde back then. But I think it was with love, and I never really hated on her. I wasn't like ever a hater. I just feel like I was like, this is like talented, sweet girl. And I don't know. I was trying to remember the big body shaming moment, like the mom jeans, and
that was so far into her career. She had already, that was 2009.
We were like adults. Yeah. So I was trying to, we can get into it, but I was like, did I ever like tweet something? Cause like I don't know. I was like, we were all different back then. We were assholes, you know. It was like, it was acceptable what people did and said about her back then. It wasn't acceptable, but like more acceptable than it is today. Like, we've come so far. But I was like, did I, you know, was I part of this like moment that I was just hoping I wasn't, you know, like part of the moment that like made her.
I mean, I feel like we could get back more into this, but when I read that, I went back and even looked up the photos and went, oh my God, I can't believe we thought this was fat back then. That was also at the tail end of that 2000s anorexic phase where everyone had to look like Nicole Richie and Paris Hilton and the Olsen twins. And you look and you go, oh my God, she really was just a size 4.
I just think she's like funny. I've always thought she was like fun. I liked watching interviews. I thought she was no filter, fun to watch, quote unquote dissy and dumb. But I think even we all knew she is smarter than she gives off. And so I guess I've always just kind of been a low-key fan.
Low-key, like, she's a girl, she's not my girl, but yeah, I got no problems with her.
Right, no problem. Yeah.
I feel like that moment, that like that mom jeans moment is something like, it is one of those things where like, obviously it was never okay to body shame, but like people really were, it like was the culture. Like everyone was just like, I don't know, someone like looks not like we expect them to. Everyone just like flipped out on it. And it was such a moment. And then I feel like it was compounded by the fact that she was like not in the spotlight as hard anymore. And so everyone was like, this like sad attempt at a comeback is really mean.
Yeah. And remember there was a thing that happened with Kim Kardashian where some terrible pictures surfaced and just her
butt
looked so crazy. But at the end of the day, like, we stars an influencer, well, whatever, famous people control their narrative so much more. So like, had that been an Instagram days, whatever. Also, who cares? It doesn't matter if she was overweight or if she wasn't, but today it would have been a lot easier for her to be like, hey, this is what I look like, and shut it down.
There's a lot more room.
All you have are like pat pics and everybody's like, oh my God, she's fat. And it's just crazy.
Especially back then, because we're mad that she doesn't look the way we think she should look, when the way we think she should look was forced upon her as well.
Was like unhealthy, Dukes of Hazzard.
Today, I feel like it'd almost be different with Kim Kardashian, because Kim Kardashian has really participated in that idea of what a natural human body at its best can look like. And it is absolutely like a Frankenstein plastic silicone combination of sucking out and putting back in. And there is something like, what is her responsibility to look normal? And, or even, my thing is get plastic surgery, but cop to it so people don't think that's how natural. They're supposed
and you're
to
just
look.
Like doing squats. They just do a lot of squats. Okay. Yeah.
Like all the people who are like, I don't have lip fillers. I overline my lips. Duh. That's why they look enormous.
Or the puberty thing. They're like, I just went through puberty at 23 and it gave me these giant dick sucking lips. And you're like, I went through puberty. I don't remember that.
Jessica Simpson is one of the like one of the most natural beauties. I mean, she truly is. Like,
she was so gorgeous. And I think my feeling about her going in was that I didn't like, she wasn't my favorite either. I didn't watch Newlyweds because I didn't have MTV back then, but I did have this like low key understanding that she was the most talented and the most beautiful, and she never got her due. But I wasn't going to give her her due. I wasn't going to buy the album to help her out.
I think
out,
it's,
but
it was because of like, I mean, the sex, like sex sells. Like, I think it was the, I'm not saying I agree with that or take that stance, but like she was caught in this limbo of like Christian music and trying to be clean and then everything. I don't know. Like she was in the Christina Aguilera dirty era.
Yeah. The sexy virgin. And it just felt so inauthentic.
So how do you straddle the line? Maybe she could have been the like most famous like Christian pop artist of all time, but
yeah, she should have, but she was caught trying to be something she wasn't. We feel like this book was filled with like truly some of the craziest stories. Like even if she hadn't been Jessica Simpson, I feel like even stories from her childhood. Do you have any specific moments where you were just like, what the fuck was that story? That story is shocking to me.
I made some notes. I didn't know anything about Johnny Knoxville. So did you guys?
I had no idea that she had this like emotional, like, cause they never hooked up, right?
No.
In the book, she like just details that she just like was in love with him.
Yeah, she had an emotional affair. I mean,
like with Johnny, if she was going to tell me that she was going to have an emotional affair with a co-star, like if you told me that before I'd read the book, I would have guessed truly any other person in Hollywood before I guessed Johnny Knoxville.
Yeah. And also that he was the Southern gentleman who released the true depths of her soul. And I'm like, the guy that's like farting into a can and then making his midget friend eat it. Like that guy helped you see honesty for the first time.
Well, I mean, the whole book was like so honest and raw and crazy. I mean, because I wasn't this like super fan that knew everything about Jessica Simpson. So a lot of it, I guess was kind of new to me. I mean, I thought it was crazy she turned on the Notebook. Like, can you imagine The Notebook with her and Ryan Gosling? I can't even like think about it. It's so crazy. I mean, of course the sexual abuse, like I know we're not gonna, this, we could do a whole episode on that. And I don't, I want to give it the seriousness it deserves. And I mean, that was shocking and terrible. And I think one of the scenes that I pictured the most shocking was like her parents not reacting quite, but I guess they did at least not ever hang out with that family again. But so that was awful to read. But I think the most tragic thing was her cousin dying. Like that, it was like, what? I was like, what the fuck? Like this girl has been through so much. I was like, I cried a lot.
I cried about the Sarah story. I mean, I'll just let our listeners know real quick. The story of cousin Sarah, her favorite cousin who was 2 years older than her, was that she had just graduated from high school. She was going to her own graduation party with her boyfriend. They were driving in a car.
Right.
That day, a carnival was in town and a horse named Gracious Will had run away from the carnival, was hiding in a ditch and jumped up not just into their car, but onto their car, went straight through the windshield and landed on her cousin Sarah, killing her instantly.
I just like that story is, it is so tragic and I can really see how it shaped her. But like the fact that she didn't just write Sarah died in a car accident, the fact that she was like, she made contact with a horse and died. Like
I did have to read it a couple times. Like I was like that and yeah, I mean, and leading up to it, it's just like they really definitely she didn't play it up, but like they were like best friends. That was who she idolized. She wanted to be like, and then she just like died in like a freak accident.
A horse.
It really like shook me up.
It's really tragic, but I will say, as someone who didn't know them, to think of a horse landing on you through like just hooves first through the windshield, coming straight at, I think it's the dead onness of it all. I could understand hitting a deer.
Like a head on collision with a horse is.
And like, I mean, I don't want to make light of this. Like, I think as comedians, it's hard not to want to make jokes, but there's no jokes to be made. But I'm also like, did she love horses? Like, can you imagine? Like that's how you go out.
It is tragic. So sad and hard to not make light of. Like I will
say, but she went, you know, I will say I'm not a religious person. I mean, I grew up going to church and everything, but she, Christian, but she, I think that her faith like got her through a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Like it seems to me that like, thank God she was really into the church and walked with God. And I mean, she, you know, is a person that feels like she was like called by God to do this thing. So, yeah. You know, I think that like kept her going because there was like a lot of tragedy.
There was a lot of tragedy. And I have to say, like, I mean, I think it is easy to look back and remember the good about somebody, but Sarah did seem like an exceptionally good person. She had done this thing where she graduated that week. And right before she graduated, she had written a handwritten note to every person in her class, every classmate, saying how much she loved them and how she prayed for them and how she hopes they find God one day. And so they were like receiving these letters post-mortem. And I was just like, I literally sat back and thought, should I be sending letters every day in case I die soon?
Just in case. I also was like, I mean, should I like try to find God now? Like, it really painted God in a great light.
It really made me, Sarah, and the way that Sarah helped Jessica Simpson find God, her dead cousin Sarah helped me be like, do I want God in my life?
Yeah.
I like would love to be the kind of person who's constantly praying for other people.
I know.
I don't know.
I believe in a higher power. And I'm super into like, you know, manifestation and all that kind of stuff, which is prayer. You know what I mean? We're not going to put on this road.
But just the idea that she is like looking at, like, I have never once thought about my classmates. Let me tell you, I left high school and like never looked back. A lot of them have unfollowed me. I actually had one reach out to me. And when I found out he lived in New York, I was like, oh my God, I thought I was the only person from our class in New York. And he goes, no, there's like 20 of us and we hang out a lot. And I was like, okay, so like clearly I was not writing letters to my classmates, but I would like to be somebody who wrote letters to their classmates. It did inspire me to like maybe be a godlier version of myself.
So the takeaway is that we're all like in a small group now after reading. We're all in like going to church together.
Well, like my like a cynical ass Jewish kind of like take, I guess, like a lot of the Christian people that I knew were either like, I like kind of categorize them in two ways. People who were like Christians who like genuinely like wanted the best for people and people who were Christians for clout. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of, I don't know if this is like really fucked up to say, but I feel like a lot of Christian culture that I was like exposed to early was people who were like mean and like mean to anyone who wasn't Christian. You know what I mean? Like people who were like telling me I was going to go to hell because I was Jewish. And then there were like the other half were the people who were like, I'll pray for everybody anyway. You know what I mean?
100%.
And so I like kind of didn't know if her like Christianity was like for show. Do you know what I mean? Like a marketing situation, because like also she was showing her tits the whole time and I like didn't really get it. And I feel like in this book, I was like, oh no, she's like believes in God.
I agree though, because I know those Christians. And I, even though I believe that Jessica Simpson has a lot of faith and it was obviously the labels who were making her sex it up.
Right.
I still felt like annoyed by her faith. And that might be a personal problem. But there, I do feel like she really, there was a couple times in the early chapters when she talks about being Baptist and how she was only called forth by the Lord to be baptized once, but other people would go a lot for the attention. And like, there was I noticed there's three separate times where she was like calling out other Baptists for only doing it for the attention. And I was just like, all right, Jessica, I get it. You're the pastor. I felt a lot of pastor's daughter.
Pastor's daughter vibes.
There was a lot of pastor's daughter energy, but like I do, you know what I mean? Like the amount that it like threaded through the whole book.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, it does seem like a very constant presence in her life and in her actions. Yeah. And so like, I think that she does have like a little of both in her, but I think it was like comforting for me to be like, okay, no, this is something that she like truly believes in. She's not just like up there being like, and on my Bible, I pray to sell more albums.
Yeah.
I think it's totally, I think it's totally authentic to who she is. I also just think she's like a really genuine person. I don't know her politics. I don't know if I want to know. I mean, she's notoriously conservative and you know, but I don't know what she's going to do in November. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to get on this road.
I found her faith to be authentic, but still annoying. Like I think if I met her, I wouldn't want to be her friend. I found her a little bit cloying in her idea that Jesus was speaking through her, that her voice was a gift from him, and that, I don't know. I like,
well, I mean, it's, you don't have friends like that now. So you know what
exactly.
I mean? Like it's,
she is not somebody I would want to be friends with. Although I did read her book and I was on her side, but I was still like, I guess you really are this way.
Like, yeah, I feel like that's where I was. It's like, it is comforting to me to be like, okay, this is not all an act. Like, it is still something that I don't love, but it's not fake, which is great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, and she seems maybe like, you know, I like that the book didn't like shove religion down your throat or like Christianity. Like, I do feel like, I feel like she is probably genuinely one of those people that doesn't judge you if you're atheist, agnostic, Jewish, whatever. I hope.
Totally. Well, I think she has her current, I mean, she dated or married Nick Lachey, who wasn't religious. And then her current husband, I'd assume is like Buddhist or something. He seems very,
he seems so like Buddhist.
He seems like, what are the Asians into now? That's my thing too now. Okay. Do you feel like was there any point specifically where you were shocked by her honesty?
Probably the John Mayer stuff, just because he's still so famous and like she just put him on blast, you know. Not that it was so terrible, she didn't call him like an abuser or anything, but he came off like a pretty shitty guy. Oh my gosh, can we back up to my most what the fuck moment? I really do think this would be it for me. Is that he was hanging out with her family.
That was so crazy.
After he had like, that made me really disrespect and her family. Like,
yeah.
It was just because he was such a cool guy. This guy's been fucking over your daughter for what, years now? Like, he should be dead to you. Like, it's, you guys, now he's at the barbecue. Like, it's so, the John Mayer stuff, the honesty was so brutal. I mean, Nick Lachey too, but it was so long ago and he isn't so famous and I'm sure he didn't love it, but like, you know, the John Mayer stuff was like, this guy is still an A-list celebrity and you are like painting him in a light that is not positive. I mean, I'm here for it.
Well, I feel the same way with the Nick Lachey. I felt that not only is he not famous now, but the way that played out is almost how anybody could have imagined it played out. He started famous. She didn't. She eclipsed him by a million and he couldn't handle that. I think it kind of panned out, how you'd assume, to nascent stars.
Yeah.
One after the other.
I think that if she had really gone after Nick Lachey hard, like, she just told the truth flat out what happened with them. But I think if she'd like truly gone after him, she would have looked pretty bad, you know. Like, it would have been really like, I don't know, you're running a $1 billion company and he is probably like sharing, like, he and Vanessa Lachey are probably in a condo right now, you know, like they
Well, she has that hilarious line where she's talking about the end of the divorce, and when she says, whatever amount of money he wants, just give it to him, and she goes, I promise,
give or take a million,
a billion.
a billion, right? Well, which, a billion, okay. That's the best line of the book. I had to like sit with it. I had to let it settle in. It like really, it was so empowering. It was so great that she was like, give whatever the fuck he wants. I'm about to be a billionaire. She's not a billionaire though, right? She's like,
well, her company is worth it. She's a billionaire. Like, Kylie is a billionaire, and that the company is worth
a
billion.
Not like a Jeff Bezos billionaire.
No, but she did create a little lifestyle empire.
Were you guys shocked at the success of her company? I didn't know.
Like, what I was shocked at was the honesty. She was like, here's why I'm successful. And she gave like a from the heart branding advice, which was that she really honestly wanted to get stuff that people would wear at a decent price. And as somebody who owns things from the Jessica Simpson collection,
same.
I was like, I remember finding a pair of nude pumps and I was like, finally, a normal pair of nude pumps that I can wear to my internship that are under $100. Like, it really was like, how could this be so impossible to find? Thank you, Jessica Simpson. And then she had the second bit of advice, which is when she teamed up with Vince Camuto from Nine West, they got she got a non-compete clause with him, so he couldn't do any of his celebrity brands. Yes, and I was like, I respect when people come in and give you like an honest, like, actionable answer. Like, I hate when people are like, just follow your dreams and listen to yourself. I'm
listen
like,
to God.
I'm listening, but do you have like business advice? Like
don't give me the email address, but like, tell me that I should be emailing someone with the title of blank, and I'll like use LinkedIn to find the resources myself. But like, you know, people are like, you just have to like find stuff out. And it's like, I literally did not understand the inner workings of companies until like a year ago. Like, I just didn't.
I interned in a magazine out of college and was like, how do magazines make money? Like, I literally didn't know even how they worked. And I was like, oh, ads. I never knew.
When I started stand up, this is where like, I really get mad when people give bullshit advice. Cause when I started stand up, I asked like 20 people, everyone from a kid I knew in college to Michael Che on DM and BJ Novak at a book signing, like, can you give me advice? I want to do stand up. And BJ Novak said something like, move to Paris. That's not helpful.
That's bad advice.
Michael Che said, whatever you do, just be honest. not helpful. Finally, I met somebody who was like, you go to open mics. This is the time. This is the date. You put your name in a bucket and you bring your material and you just start. And I was like, thank you.
Yes. Well, and that's a lot of people. I feel like a lot of people's stand-up story is just going to their first mic or to see a friend or something and then being like, oh, I can do this. Or going to some show that's like not great and you like see somebody do it and you're like, oh, I can do that at least as good as them.
Yeah, you watch them
like,
fail.
And you're like, can I do that here? Can I come back and do that here? Like, look, nobody tells you how to actually do it. I'll tell people. I'm happy to tell.
Me too. When people reach out to me, I go, here are the mics. Here's my recommendation of a mic. If you want me to go, I'll go. Like, but here's the time and the place you need to put your body somewhere.
Right.
But back to the John Mayer stuff. So what you're talking about specifically is that if you guys didn't read the book, after her and John broke up, and I mean, quite a bit after, she was living with Tony Romo down in Dallas, and John Mayer was still going to her parents' house for like family gatherings and barbecues. And at one point, 2 years into her Tony Romo relationship, he played a song and sang to her family and begged them to help him get her to dump Tony Romo and get back together with him and confess his love for her, to the point where even her house manager was like, listen, Jessica, you got to break up with your boyfriend. And then immediately he didn't even want to get back together with her. It was like all a ruse.
I mean, he's such an evil manipulator. It like is so crazy. And this is the reason I was so happy she threw him under the bus. And like for anyone who says it was too harsh, it like really is like guys can say whatever they want. And then if a girl hurts a guy's feelings, everyone's like, but how could you say that about him? Because of the story where she talks about how she was like working on some like feminist travel show. It was like about how like there's beauty standards. The beauty standards are different in every country.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
And she was like doing this show where she would like travel and like talk about the beauty standards and like help empower women to be like, just because you don't feel like you're like the media is properly representing you. Like everywhere is different. Everywhere has different standards, like whatever.
The price of beauty.
The price of beauty. And it was like about like the different like surgeries that people get in other countries as compared to like what we're obsessed with in America. And then right before she was doing press for that, John Mayer said in an interview that she was like a sexual napalm. And then all of her interviews, they were just, like, asking her about that. And she was like, I was trying to promote this show that would, like, empower women and, like, discuss beauty. And instead, now I'm having to, like, discuss and, like, be ashamed of, like, my sexuality. And I was like, that is so cruel that he did that. Yeah. And, like, it's so fucked up because I knew that line, that, like, sexual napalm thing.
Yes.
I remember hearing that about her. And like,
I remember that more than I remembered her songs. It took me a while to even remember what her hits were.
Well, Irresistible. I remember that. I'll have that music video burned into my brain until I die. But yeah, so hearing that, it's like he did that to her. So why can't she write about him in a book? Because that was like a really fucked up thing to say that has like gone down in history, like forever tied to her name.
I definitely don't think she did a great job. She didn't also name caller. She just told what happened. But are people criticizing her for throwing him under the bus, by the way? I was just curious if you've like seen.
I don't think that anyone was specifically saying she shouldn't have, but all of the headlines I saw about the way she talked about him were that same like media style of being like Jessica Simpson like says awful shit. You know what I mean? Like it was never like John Mayer treated Jessica badly. It was all like Jessica Simpson said horrible shit about John Mayer.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I have to Well, something that shocked me about it was her honesty and her own part of it. She even has a line where she's like, was he stabbing me in the heart or was he just holding the knife and letting me run into it over and over again?
Damn.
And she talks about, I think, the night of the Met Gala, just like he breaking up with, she brought him as a date. He broke up with her that night in the Four Seasons Hotel. And then she was just outside all night banging on his door until he would let her back in. And it's just like, that's not a pretty picture of Jessica either. Like, she doesn't come off looking good. She spent a whole year on tour with him, just living in his bus, like, letting him buy her stuff. Like, I find that she was pretty honest about how, I don't want to say pathetic, but he really did. She allowed herself to be in that role for quite some time, and she was pretty honest about how it stripped her of all of her career and identity, kind of.
Yeah, there. I saw a headline while I was just reading some other reviews on it that said, in her memoir, she spares no one, including herself, which I think is so fair. Like, it's just all, it's honesty of from about everybody, including herself. Like, it's, she didn't make him look bad and make herself look good. Mm-hmm. She just told the story. You can make your own judgments.
And I felt like it was an incredible, I think if you haven't been in that relationship, you have a friend who has been in that relationship. Like, it is just like an early 20s toxic relationship where you let a man decide whether or not you're smart or worthy, and you just keep running back to him trying to be good enough. I mean, Taylor Swift has that Dear John song, and it's almost word for chorus, like line for verse, the same exact experience.
That, like, your chess games, like, say your chess games and you change the rules every day or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, they only give you love when you're walking away, and then as soon as you, like, decide you need them, then they pull away, and you, like, have to get it back. It's, like, this crazy, horrible, like, mind game that John Mayer is a fucking pro at.
And there was just so many, like, it felt like, I mean, obviously he's such a brilliant guy, you know, so he all obviously knows everything that he's doing, and mm-hmm. he's being purposely manipulative, but it just felt like he does these things with women to be able to write songs about it. And it's like, you know, in comedy, it's like you're doing it for the content. Like, that's mm-hmm. almost like what it felt like. He creates situations that are going to cause reactions and himself and others, that's going to inspire him to write music. It just felt like,
That's what she said.
Yeah.
She felt like she was doing it for material. And it's funny because I know a lot of female comedians who I feel kind of stop themselves from growing emotionally, like towards the healthy situation in order to keep the content going.
Yeah.
But it's so funny that of course, like a man would be like, no, I'm going to keep ruining other people. Like, I know a lot of female comedians have, like, let their lives fall apart for the Twitter.
Yeah.
And he was just like, oh, no, I'm going to keep succeeding, but I'm going to ruin Jessica Simpson. And
he's like, I'm going to be fine. But
Jennifer Aniston and Mandy Moore, like, every woman he ever dated, he's like, well, them I'll take down.
Yeah. So, and then I'll just, like, suck up their depression and write
songs.
It's
so wild that there's so many of the exact same story about him, and then, like, women keep dating him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
the celebrity.
That's on them. That's on this, like, savior complex.
Totally.
Like, I'll be different. I'll change him. No, you all.
It's like all these horrible stories about him, but he was nice to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously we feel like she was very honest. Do you think, though, that there was any point where she was purposely deceptive? Or do you feel like there was anything where you left being like, I don't think that that's the whole truth?
I know. I was thinking about this. I can't recall anything. Can you, like, can you guys, I'm not asking.
Well,
like,
my feeling, I asked that specifically because I, like, in my head had an answer.
Okay. Yeah. I want to know what you think. And maybe it might jog my memory too. Again, I want to know where her politics stand, but anyway.
I felt personally that she was very honest about herself until it came to her own motherhood. So when she talks about hitting a rock bottom because she was too drunk to get her daughter dressed for Halloween. And then the very next day there is an intervention and they have a rehab ready. And she goes, doesn't matter how drunk I was, I know I was always a really good mother. I felt that there was something. I don't think that you can be such a bad alcoholic that your friends have a rehab ready to go and you only missed one Halloween night. I felt that was
I think that in general, her intervention and recovery story felt a little bit like, and I, even though she does have that part where she's like, I decided I was going to give up alcohol after one more drink. And she like admits that, it still felt like there's something. Like, the way that it was just like, I decided I was going to give up alcohol and then we held hands and prayed and then I was done. It's like I feel like there has to have been more.
When you look, when I reread it, she has been taking sleeping pills since she was 13 years old to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And diet pills. And she had started drinking heavily. Like, John Mayer said he would break up with her because she was too much of an alcoholic. There's a story about her being so drunk she can't sing the Dolly Parton song. Like, I'm like,
oh, that was another moment that was like, yikes. Like,
that was crazy.
Yeah.
But I guess I just kind of felt like she was honest about, I guess I think she was dishonest about the alcoholism and how bad it was. I just don't think you can be that bad of a drunk and have only missed one night.
Yeah.
And then maybe, like, Ashley, what you're saying too, the, like, recovery. And again, like, I don't struggle with addiction. And so I don't want to speak on it. So I want to speak on it, like, super sensitively. But I'm, like, wondering if someone, to me and my experience with people that have overcome alcoholism, or I guess it's a lot of people consider it a lifetime struggle, but it isn't just a switch you flip and you pray on it and you're cured. And so, like, some people can just do cold turkey and go, but at least mm-hmm. the people that I know have struggled a lot more. So maybe it was for the sake of keeping the book tighter, but I am wondering if someone that has struggled with addiction read the book if they were like, oh, fuck no. Like, it's not that easy. And yeah, like we glossed over a lot of details here. But again, it's a book that people, was it more so that like people don't want to read that? Let's just keep it moving. Like, mm-hmm. was it purposeful? Was it her not wanting to share details, or was it like an editing, you know, post-production? Like, we don't need all this shit. It's people don't want to read it. It's too dark, or yeah, I don't know.
I do think as a woman, one thing you can't ever breach is being a bad mom. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I just saw that. I feel like I just watched something else where they were talking about, oh, this is so embarrassing, Younger. But they were talking about like,
please, isn't that embarrassing?
I love that show.
Top five favorite shows. The way that I'm like citing it, like it's a psychological study. I'm like, oh, I think it's just, but they were saying like people can forgive women for things. They will not forgive you for being a bad mother. Like that mm-hmm. is something that they think is so intrinsic to womanhood that how will you explain? And so I do feel like when she said missing one night was such a horrible experience, that was a rock bottom, that if I was a woman who had suffered from addiction and had children, I might've felt that was alienating. Cause I can't imagine that you just miss one night.
Yeah. And I do think it is a little bit almost alienating the way that they describe it. Like also, I mean, obviously it's a completely different situation, but like I just read Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue's autobiography. It's like more of a diary from like his worst parts of addiction. And that is like basically the whole book. Like, I don't think anyone would be like, the most harrowing parts of your struggle are like something that we should trim. I think it was probably like a PR move where we're like, we can't make you look too messy. Like, as much as we like want to show the ins and outs of your life and be like, yeah, look at me, I'm not perfect. I tripped that one time and it was so wild. And like she, you yeah. know what I mean? Like she is honest about the John Mayer stuff, but I do think that like once she became a mother, she like really couldn't share this information about like how bad it really was.
Yeah. I think you guys are right.
I don't know. I don't think it's wrong that she didn't include it. I do think that it's not 100% honest though.
I also think just like knowing moms, I don't know any mom who's like, I can say with 100% certainty, I am a great mom. Like, I feel like that's the struggle of every mother's life. Is am I like,
am I a good mom?
Am I doing a good job? Yeah.
And I feel like if she was sober to like have only missed one thing, it's like, I don't know. Like I had, my parents both worked full time my whole life. Like, I'm not saying like they missed stuff and they should be guilty, mom, if you're listening. I'm just saying that like as a mom with like a full on enormous career, like I feel like if the only reason she missed a thing is because she was drunk, it's like, there's no way she's there all the time. That's crazy.
Well, I who's to say, like, also she's like a rich person who has like plenty of people like maintaining her life. Like, you know, it's not always mm-hmm. on her. So maybe I think that, okay, well, I don't want to speculate and I certainly don't want to call her a liar. I think that, I guess the narrative they tried to share is that she was a functioning alcoholic, a functioning mm-hmm. addict, and she was able to tell herself that as long as I never miss a thing, I'm fine. So when she missed a thing, that was like her rock bottom. So
yeah, I think that
was kind of that what they were trying to say. Yeah, because like everybody has a different view of a rock bottom. For some people, it is literally like losing everybody in your life that you cared about and you're like on the streets. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But for her, it was like because she was an alcoholic that was functioning, that took so much pride in her motherhood that like the second she dropped the ball, that was like, I need help.
Yeah.
At least that's, you know.
That's interesting.
Did you have any moments that you specifically found very funny?
I'm trying to remember if I laughed out loud at any. I mean, again, my favorite moment was that line of her saying, I'll make the money back, give or take a billion. Like I like want to jump up on the couch like Tom Cruise style, but like I found her to be funny, like a funny, you know, like not like hilarious comedian funny, yeah. but just in general. I'm so sorry. I don't have like a specific thing again. Like guys, I forgot the book. It's
no way. New York.
Did you guys have any? And also you asked, did I find myself like laughing at her or with her? I just felt like always with her. I think she poked fun at herself so much and she was self-deprecating enough that it never felt like I was like, ugh, you know, laughing like at her. But
yeah, I definitely heard her wanting to be a comedian. Like it was very important to her to be seen as funny. Like uh-huh. you see that from her childhood. There were just a few times for me where the there's a time she's in the hospital and she looks out and sees a cardinal, and they're like, the cardinal sticks it out in the winter because it hangs in there because it's tough. And she's like, yes. And I'm like, did that happen?
Moments. Yeah, yeah.
There was a couple of very writerly moments where she's like describing being two and singing for the first time and turning the vowels over in her head softly. And I'm just
okay,
like,
yeah, like, yeah. Sometimes the language was a little too poetic and flowery. Like you're like, yeah, especially kind of at the beginning, I was like, I just want this to be straightforward. I'm just here for the tea. Like, I mean, I don't want to shit on her as a writer, because I think she probably really, she's journaled her whole life. Like, she's probably a great writer, but like there sometimes, yeah, it was a little much.
There were definitely moments where it was like
the metaphors.
Okay. Like, you weren't this like aware 7-year-old who was like watching your parents and being, I don't know, like, I can't think of a specific example, but I do think that like when she was younger, like talking about her family, it's like, there's no way you were that aware of everything happening, that you had like these insane insights about like your dad's like control issues.
I think it opens really flowery, honestly. It like does. I think it gets a little more straightforward, and
I can read the very first line of the prologue. Yeah. The kids are asleep and my husband is reading in the other room, so it's just you and me.
Yeah, it's just, it's a little dramatic.
Yeah, there is, yeah. But I think as she gets more and more towards her true memories, I think when she has to adapt a perspective, it's a little,
it gets,
sometimes yeah. I'm like, okay, Jessica, who are you pretending to be? But when she's like talking about what she remembers, it feels very straightforward.
Yeah. Only quality I care about in a person, all my friends, like anyone I'm close with, is that they don't take themselves too seriously. So it's like, I wanted her to be that kind of person. And I feel like she was for the most part, but there were moments where I was like, yeah. I was eye rolling a little bit.
Yeah.
I agree. And I think I do think it's hard to remember earlier parts of your life. And so then you do have to kind of like cosplay as your own self. And you're like,
bring out the cardinal metaphors.
Yeah,
I don't. I will say, I was wondering what you guys thought. And again, perhaps this is just because I'm not like involved in the church, but I really didn't enjoy the beginning as much. Until Nick Lachey came along, I was like really just trying to get through it. It wasn't that much of interest to me. And that's just my preference. You know, maybe some people found so much like enjoyed the beginning more, but like to me, I was like, I just want to get to the Jessica Simpson that I knew, like at the point in my life, and like the pop star Nick Lachey, and like get to the tea. Like, I just didn't care so much about the beginning of her career and her childhood. I hate to say it.
I felt very like, this is awful, but the parts that I had a hard time getting through were her USO trips, where she was like describing singing to deployed soldiers and troops. So I was just like, okay.
That was for her.
Well, and not to take anything away from it. It's amazing.
It's just not my value.
I just didn't care about reading it. Like, I was like, okay, can we get back to
Well, that's what I'm saying. When I didn't like her, there's a specific line where she talks about how one of the leaders of the youth group loved Jessica because she did such a good job bringing in boys to youth group. But then the second job was keeping the boys off of Jessica and youth group. And I think there was something like, this is bad, but I notoriously hate virgins. I have...
Oh, God.
I think it's like, I have a fear. I find it kind of perverted to be obsessed with not having sex and to be like obsessed with being like something sexual that nobody can have and having that be your identity.
It is weird. It grosses
me out. And so I did always feel like, well, she just was a virgin who was unfortunately thrust into this light of like sex symbol, and she didn't want that. But something about that line and like how much she got off on knowing that the boys liked her as a young girl. And she actually had a line talking about in eighth grade that, sure, the boys only liked me for my breasts, but at least they liked me. Like, the girls weren't nice at all. It was a little too pick me. And I was just like, oh, I would not have liked you in eighth grade. I don't like a girl who's like, girls just don't like me because I'm too pretty. I'm too pretty and God-fearing.
But it's also like, she came out of her upbringing like better than some, you know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
because
like, I grew up super liberal parents, like no saving sex till marriage wasn't a thing, you know? So it's like, at least she turned out pretty cool for being the preacher's daughter. And like, because I mean, abstinence and waiting to have sex till marriage is literally the most foreign concept. I have no friends that
I like disagree
that.
With it on principle. I almost think it's worse to do. I would like
it's
recommend
so, it's bad.
It.
It's
and it's also like live your truth. Like I just try so hard to just like let people like I would never like I don't want people to feel judged. Like it doesn't bother me if you want to wait till you have marriage. We should do a whole episode on virginity, guys. The whole problem with that concept is it puts too much weight on sex.
Exactly.
So yeah, sex shouldn't be,
it's not that big a deal. I always wonder if nobody had told me losing your virginity was a big deal, would I have known it was a big deal?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. So it's like, it ties women to these men because mm-hmm. they want, you know, I mean, the goal is to, in the Bible is just to have sex with one person for like, it's kind of like, it does a lot of damage.
In the same way, I don't think you should have sex you don't want to have. I think you should have sex you do want to have. Like, it does feel like...
Right! Like, why
center
you
your
like
identity
dying to have sex and not get to?
Yeah, but I feel like to make your whole identity about sex in this weird, but I won't do it. It reminds me almost of, like, anorexia. Like, you know those anorexic women who cook all the time? Like, there is something even to, like, make your whole life about something you refuse to touch. I find it unhealthy.
Becomes your identity. Like
basically when you lose it, then who are you? If you've made your identity something that can so easily be taken from you, it is very scary to think that you have this pedestal that'll be pulled out and then where do you fall to? And I don't think that's a good thing to build yourself around.
Yeah.
But back to Jessica, I also think the funny thing about her being a virgin is she got married so young and then she talks about how her mom got married at 20 and her grandma got married at 18. So it is like, it's not like you waited that long.
Yeah. Like a lot of people are virgins until they're 20.
Yeah, like a lot of girls are older virgins that don't want to be.
Yeah, and it's so funny to be like, well, we held on our virginity our wedding night, and now we're all in unhappy marriages. And it's just like, you didn't have that much self-control. You only made it till 18.
I had sex at 18 for the first time, and I was like, this is so embarrassing. Like, nobody wanted to fuck me until now.
And imagine that if you had to get married, if your parents had to spend a couple, like, grand so that you could do it.
So crazy. Yeah, there was. I found a lot of that interesting, like, that there was some doubt there. Like
that her dad hated.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know all that. So,
well, our favorite fact about the whole book, I can't believe we even brought it up, Ashley, is that their wedding was brought on by 9/11. There's a story that they were broken up when he was in New York.
Oh, right.
And 9/11 happens, and at that moment, she realizes they do need to be together and get married. And so I like to think, wow, yes, 9/11 was bad, but it also brought us newlyweds. So,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us about Jessica. This is so exciting. Do you have any final thoughts on Jessica? Did you leave the book feeling differently? What is your new perception of Jessica Simpson? The open book that she is.
Okay. I shut the book and was like, I feel like she is a true angel and I like love her so much. I don't know. I couldn't like get, I get close to characters in like fiction even.
I was obsessed
so
with her.
I really, and I looked her up and I'm like, oh, she's a Cancer like me. You know, she is really not somebody I would probably ever be friends with just because of some of the way she lives her life in a little bit different way. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, maybe we could, you know, maybe I could just be at the house by the koi pond or whatever, you know, like hanging out with Jessica. Like I had a lot of respect for her. I loved that she took kind of, it seemed like to me the body shaming incident is what was a catalyst for her to create the more inclusive fashion lines. Like, I think she's a true type of person that does like take the bad and, or like, you know, make lemonade with, like, I think she's that type of person. And anybody like that I can respect. And I just think she's great. I think she's an angel. And I think she's like so talented and she should have gotten more.
Well, I will say it's funny. I don't respect. Think of her as a pop star.
My
feeling on her is that, I feel like she's like almost a Kim Kardashian who instead of a sex tape had music. Like she had this talent that was her foray into pop culture. And then she took that and became a personality/businesswoman.
Yeah, I will say, as much as I made fun of her while reading it, I also was like weirdly inspired by it. Like I really was obsessed with her. Like I kept on telling Claire, like, I can't wait to give you Jessica, because we like bought one book and I read it first and was like, God, I just can't wait to like give it to you. Like I can't. There was like this one line, and I feel like because like living in New York and like moving so quickly, there's like this one line at the very beginning where she says like everything's moving too fast, but you've created that speed. And I was like, wow, like I am too busy and it's my fault.
I love that too. And I really like it. I still think that my favorite part of the book was reading about her and Nick Lachey's relationship, like of the dynamic of the woman becoming more successful and more famous, and that she was younger. Like that was what was so crazy.
Yeah.
That he was like not only older, like it was, the dynamic there was so fucked for them as a couple. And it still sticks with me, but she like came out of that. I mean, she's been through a lot, you guys, you know? And I just also, I know we're trying to wrap up. The honesty with which she talked about her father was pretty.
That's what we're going to do another episode where we get like more deeper. But like
she fired her dad.
She fired her dad.
You know, like,
he looks bad in it. I mean, and she's not afraid. And she seems to me, I felt like that was the only part of the book that felt unresolved. She feels still angry at him in a way that she didn't actually know how to like kind of siphon off and explain. Like everything else, I felt like even with the molestation as a child, the alcohol, everything felt like she could look at it. She could understand it. She knows what her anxiety is. She understood what went wrong with John Mayer. The father relationship still felt extremely fresh to me. Like she's still working on it in therapy.
Yeah. It left some questions unanswered for sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm a fan. I'm sure everyone reading it like leaves it with like a newfound respect and appreciation for her.
Well, something, we used to have a Britney Spears podcast, and something we found about Britney Spears was that like how much of her success directly came from her. And I find that with pop stars, there's this interesting misogyny that happens, that people, when they almost try to save women, they take away any idea that they could have succeeded. So with Britney Spears, I feel like people are always like, oh, she was just this poor sex puppet being forced to act like this by some genius man in a suit at the label who knew how to pump out money. And it's always funny. It's like, actually everything that succeeded about Britney was her idea. So the idea, to the fact that we're giving the credit of her success to a man you can't even name is like kind of funny and misogynist, because the Hit Me Baby One More Time video was her, like everything, the denim outfits were her, anything that went viral, so to speak, was her idea. But we don't want to give her credit for that. We think she was just some poor puppet. And I kind of feel like you look at Jessica and it's like, she's not successful by accident.
Right.
For sure. Yeah.
She's successful because of the choices she made with her business. And I think it's very easy to act like all famous women are just a pretty face with a machine behind them. But if that were true, they would have made Pia Mia and like all these
Won't Madison Beer pop off?
Yeah. Like there's a lot of women who you're like, I mean, they could take, there's a million beautiful girls. And if all it took was a beautiful girl, there'd be a million famous people. But
right. Yeah. And I hate that narrative in the first place. I refuse to even like entertain it. It's just like, she's famous because she was talented. End of story.
Yeah, exactly. But there is this like idea that there's some man, and it's like, okay, who's the man then?
But I think, wasn't it like a woman that really helped her?
I feel like she Jessica? Yeah. Woman named Teresa was like,
the I one, like that the part A&R of that. Rep. That was like, that was, oh, the A&R rep. Yes. That like kind of really helped a lot. I love reading about like I love that there was this like woman that was part of her success, because you just think of the music industry at that time is just like a bunch of men in suits. So I know. I like,
it's so interesting that there's like this woman who believed in her so much that this woman was like, I'm going to find you. Like, we're going to fly you out. You're going to meet the label, like who like really supported her. And then like the first time like a music industry like male is prominent, it's like Tommy Mottola squeezing her stomach and being like, you got to lose 15 pounds.
Yeah. Jessica was just never going to have apps. Like, it's just leave her alone, you know? Like, she should have been like our body positivity queen back then, you know? Like, they should just let her live.
And, like, even without abs, like, she still was, like, so tiny and fit. And they were like,
yeah.
But, like, why don't we see the lines?
Like, yeah. Like, it's just, I just started thinking about, like, just had so much, like, reflection about like bodies in general, and just it was like, that wasn't her body type, just let her live.
I mean, she had the biggest boobs of all time. Wasn't that enough for you freaks? Like, let her just have these ginormous breasts and lead with that. You don't.
Right, they were like, you need Janet Jackson abs. She's like, Janet Jackson needs Jessica Simpson tits. What?
Yeah,
you know, like, leave me alone.
And they wanted her to dance. I mean, I do think I can raise in this book, and I felt like she was sympathetic, but I personally didn't like her. But I do feel that she is very knowable. Like, she does feel like a woman from Texas that you could meet if you went right now. Like, I do feel like I understand her, and that she is somebody that you probably know someone a lot like, with mm-hmm. her desire to make everybody feel comfortable and make sure everyone's taken care of and like put the family on your back, but not give yourself credit for it. I do think she is like authentic in a way she can't hide. And if they had just let her be herself from the beginning, she probably could have had the music career that she wanted. She could have been a music mogul, not a lifestyle mogul. Mm-hmm. But their mistake was trying to turn her into something she wasn't.
Yeah. And that we're lucky today that like authenticity is the most important thing. Like, there's so much less of this, like, we need you to be in this box, because it's not, people see right through it. And like, people are getting famous on Instagram and on TikTok and on YouTube. So there is no more like of that kind of.
Yeah, we want you to be a Britney type.
Yeah. So it's like, God, what if they just would have like let her fly? Like, what if like the stuff she would say in interviews, how they were always like, she needs to be PR trained. Like, what if they just would have like let it rip? I just would have like loved to see it.
I feel like she shouldn't have ever really been a pop star. I think she should have been like a country or like, you know what I mean? She should have been a God singer. I don't even know gospel. I don't know what that
a God
is.
Singer.
A singer of the Lord. Like, she would have been so happy.
All right, guys.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you so much.
I thought I could do it. You.